This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Market Talk for the month of August, where we'll be chatting through Fitch's downgrade of US debt. Amid healthy US global growth numbers, we'll also be asking, are US policymakers actually managing to steer the US economy towards a soft landing? And in China, is enough being done to stimulate the economy amid a raft of weaker than expected economic activity? So, asking the questions from a rather stormy UK is me, Frances Watson, and providing us with all the answers, Ben Bennett, who joins us from a much warmer Singapore. Ben, it's great to speak to you. How are you?
It's been a while, hasn't it? I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, it's boiling here. So, on average, I think we've got a temperate climate. But yeah, you're cold, I'm boiling.
Yeah, we need something in the middle, don't we? Now, this being for the first time that we've spoken for ages, I don't want to kick off in a negative note, but of course we've heard news overnight that the credit rating agency Fitch have downgraded US debt from AAA to AA+. European markets, as we speak, are not terribly happy about it, nor is Secretary Yellen. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, not in Asian markets overnight either, but not that bad in reality. I mean, sort of 10 years ago, back in 2011, S&P did something very similar. They went from AAA down to AA+ on the back of a debt ceiling wobble. And Fitch have sort of repeated the trick this time around. Back in 2011, when it originally happened, there was a lot more of a nervous reaction because there's all sorts of stuff that you don't really know about that is rather referencing AAA ratings and needs AAA ratings. And back in 2011, I guess things like money market funds, for example, that need to buy AAA assets, and all of a sudden, you know, US Treasury stocks weren't necessarily AAA. But after that initial wobble back in 2011, I think everyone sorted themselves out. Now, there's always a risk that someone missed something or something else has cropped up in the last 10 years or so that would cause a bit of a wobble this time around. But I'm hoping that everything was sorted out 10 years ago. And in reality, AAA down to AA+, they're still absolutely rock solid. We're not talking about a US default or anything. Fitch did say part of the reason was that the deficit is rather large. So, you know, there's a lot of debt there. But the US can print their own dollars. They're not going to default on dollars just as they need. I mean, it's called the US dollar for a reason, isn't it? They can print it. The one thing that they did highlight, which I think was a better reason for why they downgraded, was the governance around the debt ceiling. And we spoke about this, like, you know, for the weeks when we were last talking, you know, a few weeks ago, that the US could have technically defaulted. They didn't. It was all sort of political posturing. They came up with a solution. Everyone was happy. And that probably will always be the case going forward. But I think Fitch is quite right. And S&P, when they downgraded, that look, there could always be a problem. The US could technically default for a very short period of time. And I guess they would look pretty stupid if they had their AAA rating. So they just notched it down by one. But that's all it is.
Okay, so you're not terribly worried. That's good to know. Now, should we just look back on the raft of US data last week then? When we did have some good news, we had slowing inflation. We had better than expected growth numbers. Are they all pointing to a soft landing scenario then, Ben?
Definitely over the last few weeks, we've had more evidence that has emboldened the soft landing camp. I say it was the best way of putting it, and you mentioned that. So Q2 GDP in the US came out at about 2.5% annualized growth, which is not spectacular, but it's not recessionary, is it? It's doing okay. I think that the most important factors are the inflation. So core CPI did come down below 5%. Which, you know, has come off an awful lot over the last few months. Also, employment cost index, which is sort of wage inflation, lots of different measures of wage inflation, but this is one that definitely the Fed looks at, we look at, that came down to 1% on the quarter. So a growth of 1%, so I guess annualized about 4%. Again, that's been coming down a lot. And the soft landing camp, in effect, wants to see lower inflation, lower in particular wage inflation, without seeing much higher unemployment. And that's also been the case. I mean, we've got jobs data coming up soon, but the job market still looks pretty solid. We're not seeing unemployment going up. So we're getting this immaculate lowering in inflation without having to see people getting laid off. The problem that we have as a team is that it's okay to bring inflation down to a certain degree, maybe down to 3.5%, 3%, but that final bit to get it down to target, which is more like 2.5% for CPI and maybe a little bit higher for wage inflation, that's going to take a final squeeze. The Federal Reserve is still of that opinion too. I mean, they hiked interest rates just recently, so they're not happy yet with what's been going on. They need to see that final squeeze. And it's that final squeeze that we worry will still potentially turn into a recession later on this year. But, you know, we've been pushing back our timing of the recession. I originally thought that it could be happening around now. Clearly not the case with GDP up at 2.5% over the last quarter. We're pushing it back, but we still think that that is the base case, even if the soft landing case has been improved by the recent data.
And of course, I mean, we are coming to the end of the Q2 earnings season. I mean, so far, I know you're going to talk about lags, but so far we've had, I think, 79% of those companies, the figure you've quoted, have reported better than expected expectations. So not much pain among corporates at the moment then?
No, I mean, you always get the sort of 70, 75, 80% beats. That's just the job of companies' expectations, isn't it? But then when you dig in, you look at, for the S&P 500, we've had just over half as we're taping now. And the year-on-year growth in earnings, well, it's actually a small decline. It's down about 5%. That's what's currently expected on my screen, my icon screen, down 5%, which, I mean, that is a decline, although it really is being driven by big energy companies, basic material companies, healthcare, that had a really good earnings this time last year. So they're the ones that are pushing it down, and that doesn't really matter. Technology, financials, consumer companies, they're actually posting pretty strong profits. So the companies that perhaps you'd worry in a recession would be in trouble. Yeah, they're not showing many signs at all of trouble. Like I said, consumer companies are doing totally fine. But that's what you'd expect. I mean, we haven't got a recession right now. We've still got growth. So companies are still making reasonable money. I think, you know, but going forward, and as you say, the lags, the impact of the higher rates that we've had now for many quarters, not just months, but quarters, I think that squeezes companies. Ultimately, they'll look to reduce costs over time. They'll look to reduce employment. That will feed back in potentially to a weaker consumer. That's the cycle that we will expect for a recession. It hasn't happened yet. The consumer has been stronger. The government has also spent a lot more money than we thought. That's one of the big factors for why we're pushing back our recession. The government has actually been quite generous with its money. And as we've seen, Fitch has has looked at that as one of the reasons why they've downgraded the US government. They're running a big deficit, but that's helped growth.
Yeah, that's on the fiscal side, isn't it? But I'm just thinking about interest rate hikes. I mean, central bankers are still in hawkish mode.
That's right. And I think they still see the issues that I highlighted, that they have to get inflation still back down to target. Maybe a third of the journey has been done. The next two thirds is possibly going to be more difficult than what they've done so far. And they are not taking their foot off the tightening pedal. So the Federal Reserve hiked by 25 basis points, having paused, if you remember the previous meeting. Remember they said, look, we're pausing. Yep. There was a hawkish pause and they did actually hike. They've said going forward that it's, you know, whether they hike again is data dependent. So they're not ruling that out. They could even hike again. The ECB also hiked. And the ECB has, you know, growth in Europe has been a little bit weaker than it has been in the US, but they still hiked. The Bank of Japan also, slightly different situation in Japan, but in effect, they hiked because they have yield curve control. Do you remember? Like, they've got that 10-year Japanese government bond at 0.5% maxed. And they've raised that to a maximum of about 1%. It's very complicated, but in effect, they've tightened as well. So everyone is still in tightening mode. They certainly haven't sort of declared victory yet on the central banks. And with a lag, still these hikes that we only just had over the last couple of weeks are going to be impacting markets for months to come. So that's another reason why I'm still worried that growth could be low. The other thing that actually came out on Monday, and the Federal Reserve would have seen this last week, was the senior loan officer survey. So this is the Fed does a survey of the banks and asks what are credit conditions. It's a quarterly survey. The last one was taken after the regional bank kerfuffle that we had a few months ago, where banks on average said we're tightening conditions quite aggressively. And they said in the latest one, they're tightening credit conditions if even a little bit more. So they haven't alleviated that. So if you're wanting to borrow money off a bank in the US, you're faced with pretty tight credit conditions. Again, that's another reason. That's a really good indicator of future stress to come. It's just taking a while to feed through into the real economy, but I still think it's there. I still think the pressure's there.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So look, let's go to current views, also interesting, because I just want to focus on some of our investment grade credit teams and a slight change of their view, Ben, given that our economists have pushed back the time of the recession, not to say that there's not going to be one, but push back the timing. We've added a bit of risk, although our stance overall is cautious. Just talk us through that.
And in all fairness, I would say that this is quite common across a lot of investors here. I think we and a lot of other people are still worried about a recession. But when you push back the timing to the end of the year and you see markets rallying, it's very hard to maintain a very cautious underweight position because, you know, you're lagging the market. You're struggling to keep up with it. So, yeah, we've just had our latest monthly strategy meetings going through what I've just been discussing with you right now. We still think that that long-term view holds. But the shorter term allocation, you know, a few of the portfolio managers have added risk, taken their underweight or short sort of positions and reduced those, added a bit of risk, like I said, like a lot of people have. And that actually is one of the factors behind why the markets have recovered a bit. I think people have been very underweight, quite cautious, and perhaps have covered that a little bit. Maybe when we get the turning, the downturn, if there is a downturn, that then means that there's more to be sold, isn't there? Because if everyone has done the same thing, perhaps people are a little bit too invested right now and they'll have to sell in the future if we get that recession.
Okay, fine. So let's just go to China now. We haven't talked about China at all, really, have we? And a little bit of a rally in the Hang Seng, certainly from its May lows and notwithstanding the falls in Asia overnight. But certainly it's starting to creep up. Why is that, Ben, on the Hang Seng?
Yeah, and it's not, and the Hang Seng technology sector has done even better. I was looking at it a week or so ago, and from it rallied over 10% in a week. So it's, you know, really big moves. Wow. So we had a mixture, two things, and one is that we had the sort of mid-year Politburo meeting, which was released a statement afterwards talking about support. And remember, China's post-COVID recovery has been very disappointing. So the Politburo has come out and said we need to help the economy in these sorts of ways. No actual proper policies, specific policies, and no idea of where the funding is coming from. We're starting to see, though, parts of the government that do have the levers for the policies also do have the funding come out with more specific ideas. But still, it's not particularly specific. It's nothing. I don't think it really moves the dial, but no one else does, frankly. And everyone was so bearish before this point, so underweight in Chinese equities, etc., that it hasn't taken very much to get them to bounce a little bit higher. And we actually, or before all this happened, we did tactically add a little bit of risk in China as well, just on the basis that everyone is so bearish, it won't take much for things to go up. And that's been the case. But if we don't see the follow through of specific policies, of specific funding, then I think us and a lot of other people would be, you know, reducing risk again and selling this rally. That's been the way of the world, unfortunately, with China for the last couple of years.
And has that rally in China equities, has that got anything to do with the fact that commodities are on the rise? I mean, I'm just looking at the oil price, that's back above the 80 level, or is that something altogether different?
There's something to do with that. There's a link. I think a little bit of hope that there could be a Chinese recovery, some stimulus that would clearly lead to more demand for oil, for industrial commodities. We did see a little bit of a bounce. But also with oil, there's been a few production cuts announced by OPEC Plus over the last few weeks, and they're starting to bite. So I think it's probably a little bit more on the production side rather than the demand side. But the two things do help. And yeah, Brent was over $85 earlier this week. And, you know, that's up from, you know, the low 70s not that long ago. And oil impacts the US consumer quite considerably from gasoline prices, et cetera. So that will be just a marginal break. Having been a supportive element for a little while, lower prices in oil, now that's starting to reverse.
Yeah. Right. So let's go look forward to the rest of this week. We haven't got an awful lot of it left, but we've got the Bank of England decision on Thursday. We know there's going to be a hike on the cards. It's a question of how much. But as you to your point, that the good old consumer is pretty resilient. And obviously, Andrew Bailey will want to try and cool the economy further.
Yeah, exactly. I think that most people think there's be another 25 basis point rate hike. We had like the relief recently of a slightly lower than expected inflation print, which was a big relief because we prior to that we'd had a load of very high inflation prints. We still got 7% core inflation, so it's still far too high. So that's again why they're going to have to keep interest rates, keep hiking interest rates. We'll see what that does for mortgages, etc. But just keep the pressure on, which is not a great sign for mortgages, not a great sign for the consumer. One thing that we in the portfolios had looked at the underperformance of gilt yields. So, with inflation being so high, gilt yields had been selling off, interest rates going up and up and up. And we don't really think that the UK is that different from the rest of the developed markets in terms of there's an inflation problem, central banks are trying to get it under control. So we did take an opportunity to buy some gilts at these elevated interest rates compared to everywhere else, just because it just feels as though the investors on average of the market had overreacted. And we still quite like that trade. But yeah, we'll see how core inflation goes from here. Hopefully another rate hike will start to get control of this and we'll start to see some proper falls in inflation. That would help a lot for the UK.
Here's hoping on the mortgage rates anyway. Right. And just on Friday, we've got US jobs data out. Obviously, we want to see, or the Fed wants to see, some signs of cooling there.
So the unemployment rate is so low, that's very low. It'd be nice for it to tick up a little bit for the Fed, not for people who lose their jobs, of course, but for the Fed, they would like to see that loosen a little bit. And also the one thing that we look at very closely, the number of jobs created in the US in terms of the monthly, the absolute number. So it had fallen down last month. It was about 200,000, which cooling, but still we'd like to see that number reduced to somewhere between 100, 150,000. If we get something like that, that I think would fuel the soft landing camp again, because we don't want that to fall to negative. We don't want to have loads of jobs being, because that would be a recession, of course. The soft landing would be that sort of middle ground, a little bit lower than what we've seen recently, but not negative. So something like 100,000 would be the perfect soft landing number, and that would probably lead to people buying a few more equities and a few more credit bonds.
So we're looking for a one instead of two in terms of numbers. Talking of numbers, that brings me very nicely on to your number of the month, let's say. What is it, Ben, and why?
Well, I'm not going to talk about finance. I'm going to talk about, this is a personal gripe that I've got from traveling around Asia, Hong Kong, Singapore. It is the size of beer. So I'm talking 473, which is the number of milliliters in a pint, which I looked up the other day. I was trying to find out, because in Hong Kong and Singapore, when you order a beer, it could be anything. It's total chaos. It can be like a pint, half a pint. So I was ordering a pint, 473. I was trying to work out in my head how much that costs compared to the UK. And then I realized only today that that's the US pint. A UK pint is 568 milliliters. So I've been diddled totally.
So you're being shortchanged massively.
So pint. So I'm actually going straight for, we need to change everything into the metric system. I'm with Napoleon here. This is just too confusing.
And do you pay a lot more for your shortchange pint than in the UK?
Yeah, that is. It's definitely the case in Singapore. Hong Kong is a little bit better, but Singapore, the tax, the price of alcohol is prohibitively expensive.
That's outrageous. So that's why your credit rating's so good.
That's exactly right. So I'm not going to go to the bar tonight. I'm going to go for a run. That's it. Save money.
Well, that's much healthier. All right. Well, look, on a healthy note, Ben, great to see you. And you'll be back with us next time in Hong Kong, I presume.
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely. So from Singapore for now, Ben, thanks for all your thoughts and thanks to everyone for listening. Thank you. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording, and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.